So here we are, week 35. We're talking about Jehoiakim and Jehoiakim. To English readers, it looks like Jehoiachin. In Hebrew, it is pronounced with a K sound, so it'd be a keen at the end. And that's the pronunciation I'm going to use because that's what I think of when I see it. We're covering 2 Kings 24, 2 Chronicles 36, and we will touch on Jeremiah, Daniel, and Ezekiel, all three prophets speaking during this time. So let's go here. Today we're beginning to look at the Babylonian deportations that fulfill what we call completely the Babylonian captivity. Now this is really my favorite part of this study because I've taught about these kings many times in the context of the book of Daniel. And my challenge is going to be, what do I leave out? I will need all of the editing skills I can muster to keep from overloading you with what are perhaps maybe useless facts. So I will try to maintain the flow of the historical story as only the Lord can tell it and move both you and me to greater devotion and obedience so that we do not imitate the sins of our fathers as we see here. So we ended with Jehoahaz last week, and that means there are three Jewish kings left that will rule over Jerusalem as vassals. So after 586 BC, there will be no Jerusalem and no more Jewish kings. And so I ended with Jehoahaz last week, and 2 Kings tells us in 2 Kings 23 that Jehoahaz was 23 years old when he began to reign. And he reigned 3 months in Jerusalem, and he did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his fathers had done. In just 3 months, he began a reversal of Josiah's reforms. That's all it took. And Jehoahaz was taken to Egypt by King Necho, where he died. Now his brother Eliakim became king, and Necho named him Jehoiakim. And that's where we start today, with Jehoiakim. And here's a summary of his reign in 2 Kings 23:36. Jehoiakim was 25 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem. Verse 37, and he did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his fathers had done. Notice that Necho changed his name. Now that's an important point, because to name someone is to claim authority over them. And Necho makes Jehoiakim an Egyptian subject who's required to pay an annual tribute. Now, Jehoiakim is an evil king, and he is roundly condemned by Jeremiah. And not simply for his apostasy, which was there, but that he was wicked, and that was true, but he's really condemned by Jeremiah for social injustice, his callousness toward the poor, while he and the upper echelons of his officials lived in pure luxury. Now, listen to Jeremiah. In Jeremiah 22, I'm going to read this. If you get a chance to turn there, you can pause and turn there. But Jeremiah 22, verse 13. Woe to him who builds his house by unrighteousness and his upper rooms by injustice, who makes his neighbors serve him for nothing and does not give him wages. But you have eyes and heart only for your dishonest gain, for shedding innocent blood, and for practicing oppression and violence. Verse 18, therefore, thus says the Lord concerning Jehoiakim, son of Josiah, king of Judah, they shall not lament for him, saying, ah, Lord, or ah, his majesty. Verse 19, with the burial of a donkey he shall be buried, dragged and dumped beyond the gates of Jerusalem. And when an animal died in the city, it was simply dragged away from the spot where it died and thrown outside the gates to rot in a field. Jehoiakim's body would be treated with the same contempt. Now, Egyptian control only lasted until 606 BC because the Egyptians were defeated at Carchemish by the Babylonians. Remember, Carchemish is where Necho set up an outpost after the previous battle in 609 BC, 3 years before. Necho was defeated this time, though, roundly by Nebuchadnezzar, the crown prince of Babylon. Now, he becomes king this year. He becomes king of Babylon because his father dies right after this battle. So when we turn to chapter 24, of 2 Kings, Nebuchadnezzar is now the king of Babylon. And the time frame now is 606-605, 2 Kings 24:1. In his days, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up, and Jehoiakim became his servant for 3 years. As a servant state, he would pay tribute. So Judah exchanged an Egyptian master for a Babylonian one. So that's all that's happened here, going on in verse 1. Then he turned and rebelled against him. Now that was in 606 BC. In 24:2, and the Lord sent against him bands of the Chaldeans and bands of the Syrians and bands of the Moabites and bands of the Ammonites, and sent them against Judah to destroy it, according to the word of the Lord that he had spoke by his prophets, the servants. So nothing going on here is going against the plan of God. So verse 3, surely this came upon Judah at the command of the Lord. Notice that. To remove them out of his sight because of the sins of Manasseh, according to all that he had done, and also for the innocent blood that he had shed. For he filled Jerusalem with innocent blood, and the Lord would not pardon. The Lord pardoned Manasseh. We saw that. But the Lord will not pardon this sin, this defilement of the land of Jerusalem and the land of Judah. So notice the attacks on Judah. Notice all these groups I mentioned. The Syrians, the Moabites, the Ammonites. These were all mercenaries hired by Nebuchadnezzar. But this is the beginning of an unstoppable train of events. And in the year of this attack, Jeremiah came to him. Now, go over to Jeremiah again, Jeremiah 36, 1 through 4. Jeremiah comes to Jehoiakim in the fourth year of King Jehoiakim. That would be in 605. So this is after Nebuchadnezzar has taken over. Jeremiah 36, 1 through 4. The son of Josiah, the king of Judah, this word came to Jeremiah from the Lord. Verse 2. Take a scroll and write on it all the words that I have spoken to you against Israel and Judah and all the nations from the day that I spoke to you, from the days of Josiah until today. It may be that the house of Judah will hear all the disaster that I intend to do to them, so that every one of them may turn from his evil way, and that I may forgive their iniquity and their sin. So verse 4, then Jeremiah called Baruch, the son of Neriah, and Baruch wrote on a scroll at the dictation of Jeremiah all the words that the Lord had spoken to him. So Jeremiah is dictating to his secretary, Baruch. Baruch reads the scroll to the city. He reads it out loud after he writes it, and to all the officials, but he doesn't read it to the king. But when the officials hear this, after he writes this and reads it, they're all afraid because they hear very clearly what the Lord is going to do. Now, here, let me interject one thing here. If people hear and believe that God is going to do this, it's not that God's not going to save the city. The land is defiled. He's going to let the Babylonians finish the job. What the believers will do is they will submit themselves to Nebuchadnezzar and willingly go into captivity. They won't try to run away. They won't try to fight. That's the background on this. The believers will go as a remnant into Babylon. So many of these people that hear Baruch read this, they're afraid. And what they do is they tell Baruch and Jeremiah to hide. And a man named Jehudi gets the scroll and takes it to the king. That goes down to Jeremiah 36, verse 22. So down further in the chapter. It was the ninth month, and the king was sitting in the winter house, and there was a fire burning in the fire pot before him. As Jehudi read three or four columns, the king would cut them off with a knife and throw them into the fire in the fire pot until the entire scroll was consumed in the fire. Yet neither the king nor any of his servants heard all these words was afraid, nor did they tear their garments. Notice they had the opposite reaction of the people who'd heard this in the city. They weren't afraid at all. In fact, he's taking the scroll as he's reading it and he's throwing it in the fire. Now look at 26 through 29, going on down. 26, and the king commanded Jeremiah, the king's son, to seize Baruch the secretary and Jeremiah the prophet. But the Lord hid them. Verse 27, Now, after the king had burned the scroll with the words that Baruch wrote at Jeremiah's dictation, the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah, comes back to Jeremiah again. He says, take another scroll and write on it all the former words that were in the first scroll, which Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, has burned. Do you see now why the Lord said, with the burial of a donkey, he shall be buried, dragged, and dumped beyond the gates of Jerusalem? Jehoiakim's body would be treated with the same kind of contempt that he showed for Jeremiah and for the word of the Lord. Jehoiakim kind of set his own trap. And that degradation that he experiences doesn't stop with just a disgraceful death. This goes on further. Not only doesn't he get a burial, no dignified burial, but his line, his legacy is cursed. He is cursed in what we call the famous Coniah curse. This is very famous. Coniah curse. In Jeremiah 36:30, on down a little further, verse 30. Therefore, thus says the Lord concerning Jehoiakim, king of Judah, he shall have none, no one, to sit on the throne of David, and his dead body shall be cast out to the heat by day and the frost by night. And I will punish him and his offspring and his servants for their iniquity. I will bring upon them and upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem and upon the people of Judah all the disaster that I have pronounced against them, but they would not hear. Why is this called the Coniah curse? If it's given to Jehoiakim, because Coniah is the name of his son, who's going to be the next king. His name is also Jehoiakim, the one I talked about at the beginning, Jehoiakim. And here's the way Jeremiah talks about this curse in Jeremiah 22:45. Jeremiah 22 is going to talk about Coniah. Jeremiah 22:24, he says this, as I live, declares the Lord, though Coniah, the son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, were the signet ring on my hand. Now, that signet ring would represent a seal, an official seal, that he's an official authority of God. He's saying this, though he were a signet ring on my hand, yet I would tear you off and give you into the land of those who seek your life, into the hand of those whom you are afraid, even into the hands of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and into the hands of the Chaldeans. Down to verse 30, 22:30. Thus says the Lord, write this man down childless, a man who shall not succeed in his days, for none of the offspring shall succeed in sitting on the throne of David and ruling again in Jerusalem. You see that? Write this man down childless. Now, he has sons. He has children. But none of them are going to succeed in his days. None of his offspring shall succeed in sitting on the throne of David. So what does this curse do to the line of David? Notice this, it curses the line. How can the promised Messiah come from a cursed line? There's only one way that a king can come from this line and sit on the throne of David, and that is the mother is from the line of David, but the father is God himself. And that's what happens, isn't it? That is exactly what happens. We call it the virgin birth. And Mary, when she heard that she was with child, Mary wondered, and she said, how can this be that I have conceived? I've never known a man. How's this possible? And this is part of the wonder of what we call Christmas. And that's it's a wonder we should never get over. When we think that this woman can bear a child of a line that has been cursed through the males, but that son will not be cursed because the father himself is God. He's not a direct descendant of Coniah. We should never get over that. Now, at the end of the human line of King David, who's at the end of the human line? The physical line, it's Joseph. And see how God works it. So Joseph becomes the legal stepfather of Jesus, the Messiah of Israel, the son of David, but the son of God. Now let's go back to 2 Kings 24 and clarify a couple things. 2 Kings 24:2, and the Lord sent against him bands of the Chaldeans, verse 3, Surely this came upon Judah at the command of the Lord. This goes back to what we read before, but I want to draw your attention to a couple things. Notice, this is all God's will. And it's God's will to remove them out of his sight because of the sins of Manasseh. Now, 2 Chronicles gives more information about this attack. That's why I went back to it. It says, against him came up Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and bound him in chains and to take him to Babylon. Now, this is talking about Jehoiakim. What actually happened to Jehoiakim? There are two things we want to look at here in Jehoiakim's life. First, if Jehoiakim was taken in chains to Babylon in 605, like 2 Chronicles says, how does he die like a donkey in Jerusalem? How do you sort that out? Well, here's what people think. Many people who studied the history and look at how Jehoiakim actually died think he escaped. And when Nebuchadnezzar came back, the people of Judah assassinated him to appease Nebuchadnezzar and keep him from destroying the city. And it worked. It worked. When the people, when he came back to get him, the people assassinated him. But he came back to destroy the city, and he didn't. Secondly, what Nebuchadnezzar did in 605 was he took the whole royal court captive, not just Jehoiakim, but this included Daniel. And the royal court were the cream of the crop. These were the best and the brightest of Judah. And this is the first deportation. We call this the first deportation of the captivity. This is described perfectly in Daniel chapter 1. I'm going to go there. Daniel chapter 1, in the first six verses. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. Now, this would be 606. See, the third year. It's in the fourth year, 605, as the siege goes on for about a year. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the vessels of the house of God. And he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and placed the vessels in the treasury of his God. These are gold and silver vessels. These are valuable. Then the king commanded Ashpenaz, his chief eunuch, to bring some of the people of Israel, both of the royal family and of the nobility, youths without blemish, of good appearance and skillful in all wisdom, endowed with knowledge, understanding, learning, and competent to stand in the king's palace, and to teach them the literature and the language of the Chaldeans. The king assigned them a daily portion of the food that the king ate and of the wine that he drank. They were to be educated for 3 years. And at the end of that time, they were to stand before the king as his wise men. They're going to become literally Chaldeans in the court of Nebuchadnezzar. Notice, among these were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of the tribe of Judah. Those are their Jewish names. We all know them by different names because Nebuchadnezzar renamed them Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and renamed Daniel to be Belteshazzar. Now, why does he rename them? Well, as I touched on before, this places him over authority. He says, now you are under me. You are under my authority. So you see how all this fits together? I think, see how marvelous God is in his wisdom? This is amazing. He put a Daniel, this knowledgeable, this man is the cream of the crop. He puts a man like this, a young boy, he's only like 13 or 14, but he puts him in the court of a Gentile king, in the court of Nebuchadnezzar. God does this. And you know what? The intent of Nebuchadnezzar was to change Daniel into a Chaldean wise man, but you know, the Lord turned it all around, and it was Daniel who would change this great king. Daniel is going to have more impact on Nebuchadnezzar than Nebuchadnezzar ever will have on him. And how's he going to do that? Well, that we're going to save for later. That's a fantastic story. But fast forwarding down to 597, when Nebuchadnezzar comes back, Jehoiakim is dead. He's assassinated. They throw him out of the city. He dies like a donkey in a field. By this time, when Jehoiakim dies, the whole royal court and the best of society is gone. The line of the king is cursed. Coniah, also known as Jehoiakim, takes the throne. And our summary says in 2 Kings 24, going back there, he's just as wicked as his father. It says in 2 Kings 24:8, Jehoiakim was 18 years old when he became king, and he reigned 3 months in Jerusalem. And he did what was evil in the sight of the Lord according to all that his father had done. And Nebuchadnezzar then returns for more spoil at this time, and he's back to take out more people. And in the year 597, which is where we are now, this is the second deportation. Much more ruthless. And in 2 Kings 24:10 through 14, it says in verse 10, at that time the servants of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up to Jerusalem, and the city was besieged. Now, this is a much, much, much more serious besieging of the city. It goes on to say, and Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to the city while his servants were besieging it. He wanted to see this, and he wanted to make sure Jehoiakim understood what he was doing. So it goes on, the verse goes on to say, and Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, gave himself up to the king of Babylon, himself and his mother and his servants and his officials and his palace officials. And the king of Babylon took him prisoner in the 8th year of his reign and carried off all the treasures of the house of the Lord and the treasures of the king's house, and cut in pieces all the vessels of gold in the temple of the Lord, which Solomon, king of Israel, had made, as the Lord had foretold. And he carried away all Jerusalem and all the officials and all the mighty men of valor, 10,000 captives and all the craftsmen and the smiths. None remained except the poorest people of the land. Nebuchadnezzar left Judah as a destitute and bankrupt nation. The entire middle class now has been taken captive and deported. But the Lord has not left his remnant people without a testimony. Just as he had placed Daniel among the elite in Babylon, he placed a prophet named Ezekiel, who was also taken to live among the people at the river Kabar. We go to Ezekiel chapter 1. Ezekiel chapter 1 says this, I was among the exiles by the Kabar canal, and the heavens were opened, and I saw visions of God. On the 5th day of the month, 5 years after the exile of King Jehoiakim, the word of the Lord came to Ezekiel, the priest, the son of Buzi, in the land of the Chaldeans by the Chebar Canal, and the hand of the Lord was upon him there. Ezekiel has been here 5 years, and God comes to him after 5 years in a glory cloud. In verse 4, as I looked, behold, a stormy wind came out of the north, and a great cloud with brightness around it, and fire flashing forth continually, and in the midst of the fire, as it were, gleaming metal. He sees the very throne of God with the angels surrounding it. Now the Lord is going to show Ezekiel the most wondrous things as he speaks to him, and we get this after Ezekiel writes his book. God is going to show Ezekiel the future of Israel. And it's a glorious future. It's one where the Lord will live among the people in a new temple, in a new city, in a new world, as he has always promised. See, Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel are three of the great writing prophets who predict and foretell a future for Israel that boggles the imagination. In fact, what they say is so spectacular that many people write it off as simply metaphor or fantasy, can't be real. And why shouldn't we? You think of it. Look at the evil we are seeing in God's people even today. It makes what these guys say really hard to believe. But listen to Isaiah. Listen to what he says. Isaiah 65. For behold, I create new heavens and a new earth, and the former things shall not be remembered or come to mind. But be glad and rejoice forever in that which I create. For behold, I create Jerusalem to be a joy, and her people to be a gladness. I will rejoice in Jerusalem and be glad in my people. No more shall be heard in it the sound of weeping and the cry of distress. And Jeremiah says this in Jeremiah 31, again I will build you. He's talking about Jerusalem and the temple. I will build you, and you shall be built, O virgin Israel. Again you shall adorn yourself with tambourines and shall go forth in the dance of the merrymakers. Again, you shall plant vineyards on the mountains of Samaria. The planters shall plant and shall enjoy the fruit, and for there shall be a day when watchmen will call in the hill country of Ephraim, arise and let us go up to Zion to the Lord our God. Zion, Jerusalem, with the temple. And David, he writes about this new world. He writes about this restored creation in Psalm 96, verses 10 through 13. David writes, say among the nations, the Lord reigns. That means he's king. Yes, the world is established. It shall never be moved. He will judge the peoples with equity. Let the heavens be glad and let the earth rejoice. Let the sea roar and all that fills it. Let the field exult and everything in it. Then shall all the trees of the forest sing for joy before the Lord. For he comes to judge the earth. He will judge the world in righteousness and the peoples in his faithfulness. And who's the judge? That's the king. Because what's the function of a king? To judge, and to judge with equity and fairness and faithfulness and truth. Faithfulness, that word faithfulness is the word truth. And notice, it says that the trees will sing. The trees themselves will sing. Is that fantasy? Is that metaphor? You know, we have no idea what creation was meant to be. We've never seen it. But we will see it. And I think it's saying exactly what it says there. When it says he will judge with fairness and equity, he literally will judge. I think the trees are going to sing. We don't hear trees singing because they're under the burden of the curse placed upon them because Adam sinned. But that's going to be restored and renewed. And why does the Lord do this? Why does the Lord promise through these prophets, through David, through Jeremiah, through Ezekiel, through Isaiah? Why does he do this? Because he made promises. And then he swore an oath to those promises. And then he acted on those promises when he made a new promise. And all the wrath that we see poured out on Jerusalem, and we're going to study this, as we read the horror of it, it is nothing in light of what God will do to keep his new promise. Because Jesus said, this is the new covenant. This is the new covenant promise that's in my blood. And there is no one greater. And this is the cup I will face. And so all of you drink of it. When we drink of that memorial cup, it is to remind us that we are bound in to his promise. And he has bound himself to us. As he says in Jeremiah 31:34, he's bound us to this promise that says, their sins I will remember no more. I'm going to put my law in their heart. But there's even more than that. As we read in Psalm 96, we read that he will reign. And you know, that's Jesus. You know, Jesus told the Sanhedrin when he was on trial in Matthew 26:64, he says, you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of power and coming on the clouds of heaven. That same cloud that Ezekiel saw, he's telling them, that's what you're going to see, and it's going to be me coming. And me coming to judge. And they tore their clothes and they screamed blasphemy. But here we are. We're looking at Jerusalem in 597 BC where there is blasphemy. And Jehoiakim is taken prisoner. So who's left to rule in Jerusalem? Who's left? Remember what Jeremiah had said about Jehoiakim? Write this man down childless. Now Jehoiakim, who is Coniah, did have sons, but none of them would ever sit as king on the throne. His name, Jehoiakim, his name is in Matthew 1:12 in the genealogy. But now Matthew calls him Jeconiah. Jeconiah. And he is the father of Zerubbabel. Who's Zerubbabel? Zerubbabel is the righteous governor of Jerusalem after the captivity, after the people of Babylon go back home. But he says, remember, write this man down childless. He is a man who will not succeed in his days, for none of his offspring shall succeed sitting on the throne of David and ruling again in Judah. But Nebuchadnezzar has a solution. He's got a solution. He's king of Babylon. And in 24:17 it says, and the king of Babylon made Mattaniah, Jehoiakim's uncle, king in his place and changed his name to Zedekiah. Now, Mattaniah was another son of the good king Josiah. The good king had these sons. None of them are anything but wicked. He's the younger brother of the first king after Josiah. He's the younger brother of Jehoiakim. And Mattaniah, as it says, is Jehoiakim's uncle. He is not a son of Jehoiakim or Coniah. Write this man down childless. But as we have seen, the Lord has a plan, and that's not the end of the line. Nebuchadnezzar puts a puppet king on the throne in charge of a bankrupt nation. The middle class is gone. Only the poor people are left. But note this, leaving this man as a puppet king, Nebuchadnezzar changed his name to Zedekiah. And that says to Mattaniah and to the people of Judah, I own you. So we'll pick that up there next time. But until then, do this. Believe in the cross. That's the new covenant. Obey the Lord. He's our King. Don't worry. Be expectant of His blessings. Then we can be like the blessed man, focused on the coming kingdom, the great city, the great assembly of joy. We can walk through this darkness because He's our shepherd. He's our King. Our dear Father, the captivity, the deportations, the foreign takeover, how dark it must have looked. Yet you showed your great wisdom through Daniel in the very palace of the king, and you showed your glory among the exiles along the Kabar River. You always provide. You always meet our needs. And as we praise you, we actually learn to be joyful even in dark times. May we learn that today before the dark times come. Oh, Jesus, we praise you for what you've done, and we are waiting for you. Amen.